From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gwyneth Cheese. Happy Wednesday. Hawa, Tuxknussum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us via our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Today, we've got the Gastineau Channel Historical Society, Parents for Safe Grad, and Juno Ghostlight Theater previews their play crawl, which is happening this week. It's all next here on the Hour of Juno Afternoon.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Bessie Cooley. And the word this week is hatlik-uch.
Hatlik-uch.
That means porcupine. And here's a sentence.
Hatlik-uch. Kageinach yagaguch.
Porcupines walk down slowly. Let's hear it again.
Hatlik-uch.
Porcupine. Gunas Cheesh to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Bessie Cooley is Kokhetan and a child of a Yenyedi man. She is from Daisleen, Teslin, and grew up spending time in Teslin and around Teslin Lake. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University and interviewed many speakers for the Hashagun language series. She is currently translating projects for the Children of the Taku Society.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yitin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha ane kak gunish cheese.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on the live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. My first guests today are Renee Hughes and Gary Gillette from the Gastineau Channel Historical Society. The Last Chance Mining Museum opening day is this Saturday, May 16th. And International Museum Day is this Monday, May 18th, when they'll also be open over there at the Last Chance Mining Museum. Gwyneth Cheesh, Haye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio today. Wasiati Renee, how are you today?
Good. Hi, Boston.
Hi, and welcome back to the show, Gary. How are
Thanks.
You?
Doing great.
Excellent. I know we have some other stuff to talk about as well, a couple books that you had that are now available and some other things, but let's talk about the opening of the Last Chance Mining Museum. It opens this Saturday. Renee, tell us a little bit, for those who may not know, what is the Last Chance Mining Museum?
Well, the Last Chance Mining Museum is the old compressor building that was part of the AJ Alaska Juno Gold Mine that was the foundation of the modern day Juno, because it was such a big operation as part of the gold rush.
Oh, I see. Okay. And when did it get turned into a museum?
Well, the museum under our guidance has been open. This will be our 31st year.
31st year. You have been doing this for over 30 years?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Wow, that's amazing.
And we've been celebrating International Museum Day for almost that long.
Yeah, because it correlates to about the same time, right, in terms of when you open for the summer to when Museum Day is.
We usually pick the weekend closest to May 18th because that is International Museum Day.
Yeah.
And we used to partner up with all the museums in town and do a group celebration. But
yeah, that's awesome, because Museum Day is an international thing, right? It's like everybody gets together or they try to have people work together, like you talked about with the local museums here. And I was looking it up because every year they have a theme, and I like the theme this year, Museums Uniting a Divided World. That's
yes,
kind of cool.
Sharing our history.
Yeah, so that's gonna be really fun. And it hopefully it acts to bridge across cultural, social, and geopolitical divides, fostering dialogue, understanding, inclusion, and peace within and between communities worldwide, because there's museums everywhere, right?
And the AJ employed men from everywhere. There are all kinds of nationalities.
Oh, yeah. Do you have some of that history in the museum about who was working back
yes.
then? Yeah, okay. That's kind of cool.
In 1929, in Earl Redmond's book, in Treadwell, there's a list of all the nationalities. And I love the fact there was one Turk.
Nice. People from all over the world come to the little town of Juneau.
Yes.
It's pretty great. So what are you have anything special this summer going on? I know you're also on Saturday going to have there's an event surrounding. Tell me a little bit about what's going to be happening on Saturday.
Well, we're going to open up at noon for the season, and we'll have a variety of different people milling about, people that have helped us publish books, like Bill Janes, who has got his new book that he published last year that we have republished, and it's called The Treadwell Carpenter, which is part of the mining history. It's very well researched. We've got The Founding of Juneau, plus a couple of other publications that the Historic Society has published. In the Miner's Footsteps, talks about all the mining trails that mining roads that are now nature trails.
I see.
Around
okay.
our community.
Yeah. And you're going to be, opening up at noon, and do you have like a little celebration kind of happening?
We have treats from Rainbow, our winner from our sourdough competition a couple of years ago.
Right.
She'll be bringing pastries. Plus, we're going to continue with the scavenger hunt, and
okay.
there'll be just a variety of different things happening, and we're going to have free admission for the day.
Oh, that's nice, too. Yeah, free admission for the day on Saturday, opening day. And so, Gary, tell me a little bit about, like, what's the importance of the Last Chance Mining Museum and keeping it going? Obviously, you both have a passion for it. You've been doing it for over 30 years. So tell me a little bit about why it's important that we have the Last Chance Mining Museum.
Well, the history of our community is important, and the Alaska Juneau Mine during the 30s employed over 2,000 men and their families. Of course, at the time, women were not allowed to go underground, so they had a few women work in administration or something, but now today women do go underground.
So the
other thing is that the buildings itself that were located in are virtually the last buildings left. As you know, this last year, the building down, the old steam plant down on South Franklin Street was demolished.
That's right.
And so really there's no physical evidence left of gold mining in our community. And there's some stuff over at Treadwell, but, you know, that's all, kind of ruins.
Yeah, it's piecemeal. It's yeah. like, yeah, yeah. So
but this is
like
an
intact.
Actual building that's yeah. still intact.
Yeah.
And so you get a sense when you go in there of what it was like back in the day, operating. This was the compressor created compressed air to run the drills and the jackhammers and that type of thing. So it was, very important for the operations of the mine. And so it's pretty interesting. We have the largest air compressor in size built by Ingersoll Rand Company.
Oh,
and,
wow.
The wheel itself, the flywheel, weighs over 11 tons. So it's huge, and people are pretty impressed by that.
Yeah.
And the amount of electricity it took to run it was 2,200 volts, which we don't even have anymore. We couldn't start it if we wanted to, but it's been so well preserved, it could probably work if we had enough power to run it.
Speaking of preservation, I'm curious, over the 30 years, in terms of upkeep, what happens to the buildings and the area that you have to upkeep over all these years? Are the things you have to do every year to sort of maintenance-wise?
Yeah, there's some things. We actually, when we first started years ago, the building was, all the windows were blocked. and covered with metal and stuff. And we've opened that all up. We've replaced a lot of windows, a lot of glass, had a lot of volunteers, got some grants from the state to do that. So we've done a lot of work to the building over the years.
Yeah.
Put a new roof on it. It was, for a while there, we had buckets all over the place. The thing is a lot of the buildings, especially up there, were built of wood on wood pilings that have all now rotted. That building, because it's kind of set in the hill, has a concrete foundation and floor, and it's probably the one thing that saved it from rotting and collapsing. So it's relatively in good shape.
That's great.
For a building.
And so, Renee, when can people go to the museum or bring their visitors? I'm sure you also get a lot of traffic from the tourism season.
A lot of independent travelers, locals with visitors in town. But we will be open Thursday to Monday from 2 to 5 every day during the summer.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yes.
And you go from 2 to 5.
Yes.
And you just take a little hike up the hill there, and you get right to the Last Chance Mining Museum.
Yes. Saturday, we will have a sweet young lady who will assist people getting up the hill.
So it'll be
a lot easier.
Okay. Yeah. That's great. So you mentioned these books earlier, and I wanted to ask you about those. So tell me again about these two that you now reissued one, or you're publishing them. Tell me a little bit about this.
Well, the highlight of our books this year are The Founding of Juneau, which was written by Bob DeArmond, Sr., a long time ago, and as part of the celebration of our centennial and statehood.
It was a celebration of the U.S. bicentennial.
Oh, back in the 70s.
76.
Okay.
Then it was republished to celebrate Juneau's centennial in 1980, but it's been out of print since then.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're bringing it back.
So we're bringing that back, the original text and everything, which even today is accurate, and there's never been another really book of history about Juneau's founding since then. So we think it'll be pretty popular.
That's interesting. I was curious, too, with this book, like, I know it starts with the founding of Juneau, basically, but does Bob cover any of sort of the indigenous history that was here beforehand? Was it really the sort of the, you know, what started Juneau? I'm curious.
Yeah, he does history. Cover
yeah.
At the very beginning, talks about the indigenous people here.
Yeah, okay.
And then, you know, a lot about how Cowie helped Juneau and Harris find gold, and a lot of the prospecting history of people coming to Juneau, and then the formation of Juneau, the actual Harris filed paperwork to establish the original town site.
Right. Okay. Do they go into the famous story about Joe Juneau and all that, the bet and all that? Is that a true thing that happened?
It's interesting that. The story goes that when Harris was out of town, Joe Juneau was kind of mad that nothing was named after him. So he bought bought a lot of drinks down at the local watering hole and got the miners to agree to vote on changing the name.
I see. So he.
I don't know if it's 100% true.
Right,
but it's a nice story.
Embellishments. Not fun embellishments for sure. And what year does it go up to? When does the book sort of stop?
Basically in the 70s, up when he wrote it.
Up until about that time. Okay. That's cool. And so that is now, you've republished that book, and you have that available at the museum?
Yes.
Okay. And can I also order it online or something?
Yes.
You can. Okay. And I do want to mention, I think the Last Chance Gastineau Historical Society, it's all nonprofit, so you're not making tons of money on these things, but you're preserving the history of the town and the history that happened here, which is kind of cool. And then so this other book, Renee, tell me about this other book that
The Treadwell Carpenter is basically a historical fiction, but it was very well researched about Treadwell. Mm-hmm. So it's a fictional about this man who came to Juneau to work in the mines. But because of all of Bill's research, it's very accurate as far as the historical relevance.
I see. Okay. That's cool.
But
so he took the history and kind of turned it into a narrative.
Made it into a fun story.
Yeah. That's a fun way to get the story without having to just lay out the facts, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it's set over at Treadwell. Is that where it's at?
Pretty much in okay. Douglas. It's, you know, his life and the different places he ventured during the time and his experiences working in the mine.
I see. Okay. And that was published last year, but now you've republished it?
Yes, because he only had a limited run because he was making it as his personal book, but it was so well researched that the City Museum offered a history grant that we partnered up with them and were able to publish it, and so we're going to distribute it.
That's kind of fun. I love that. That's really good. And so I'm curious, before I have to let you go for today, I love this that you've been doing it for over 30 years, and I'm just curious, like, what was the sort of impetus to get you started, to take over the mining museum and to, you know, to sort of the historical society and all that? Where was it? What's the passion for you all in there?
Well, the museum started, it's had a sporadic history. Uh-huh. And during the 60s, Connie Bocheever and Carol Eastaw developed Hooch Newen Hotcakes because they were tired of seeing the buildings empty. So they developed the melodrama and developed something that they could entertain visitors in our community. And they had the train that would go to the mill site, which on the waterfront, that happened during that time period.
Yeah.
And so then it closed down because that play ceased to be viable for our community.
Right.
And then when the bicentennial happened, we got a little bit of money and it was open. And then when Gary and I got together, we had been hearing some rumblings that other people might want to be interested in developing something up there. And because the nonprofit was already established, it just became much more reasonable for us as a nonprofit to run the museum.
I see.
And we've been running it ever since.
Wow. What keeps you going?
Well,
the love of the
passion.
Yeah, the passion for it.
Just a little bit of crazy sometimes.
Yeah, I love that. Well, it opens this Saturday. The Last Chance Mining Museum is having its opening. You're going to open at 11 on Saturday?
12.
12, okay. So a little bit earlier than normal hours, right?
Yes, just for the
opening.
The day.
For that day. It's free admission there on Saturday. Normal admission is really
$5.
Affordable. It's $5, so you can take your visitors there.
Cash.
Or cash only. Yeah. No Venmo.
We're too far out of the mainstream.
You have no internet up there. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. I love that. Gary, Renee, thank you so much. And you can go to junohistory.org for everything that the Gastineau Channel Historical Society does. Find those books we've been talking about. Also information on the Last Chance Mining Museum. Gunnith Cheese for being here today. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, boss.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're going to take a listen to this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One here on Juno Afternoon.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Jill Freitas. In February, the Washoe Tribe of Nevada and California bought over 10,000 acres of land from the city of Santa Clara. This is the first of many land purchases the tribe plans to make and part of the broader Land Back movement, which is restoring indigenous land and benefiting the environment. KMPR's Jimmy Romo has more.
Traditionally, federally recognized tribes that want their land back have to wade through the U.S. government's notoriously long, slow-moving bureaucracy.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs, the BIA, takes forever. And when it comes to land, it's not just the BIA that it goes through. It has to go through all of these departments within the federal government and get a checkoff saying, okay, this is okay to do.
That's Cyril Smoky, the chairman of the Washoe Tribe of Nevada in California. Smoky's people, the Washishu, wanted to avoid that red tape.
We can actually move things faster by having it in a fee status to where we are paying taxes rather than going through the Bureau of Indian Affairs and trying to jump through the hoops of the federal government, even to do conservation projects.
In February, the tribe purchased over 10,000 acres of land, about 20 miles northwest of Reno, for $6 million. The acquisition roughly doubles the tribe's land, but it was a decision that didn't happen overnight. Years of consulting with parts of their 1,400 members went into it. Once enough people were on board, the council had the final say on whether to buy the land. They created a trust account to purchase their first property, helping to restore their original boundary. The tribe consists of 4 colonies, 1 in California and 3 in Nevada. The expansion is on the California side, along the Middle Fork of the Feather River's watershed. they plan to call the site the Wellmultee Preserve. It returns to the Washoe, land that was taken from them in the late 19th century through a federal policy known as allotment. Here's Smokey again.
Individual members of tribes were given allotments, and that was in order to move the Indian people to certain areas, families specifically, to live on their own lands. Part of colonization, it was to remove that tribal togetherness to where everybody would be individuals and not come back together as a tribe anymore.
Historical records indicate that the Bureau of Land Management gave lots along the Sierra Valley and in Doyle County to the Northern Washoe people. The upper part of the area is home to the single-leaf pinyon pine, which produces pine nuts, an essential Washoe food. After several wildfires in the area, the supply of pine nuts has shrunk to dangerously low levels, according to Smokey.
Under our governance, we went into a state of emergency for the single-leaf pinyon pine because of the fact that the pine nuts are not only a staple food source for Washoe people, but it's also a part of our customs and traditions and our ceremonies, and it's in our creation stories. So it's more than just a food source for us.
Now that the land is back into the hands of the Washoe people, they could focus on preserving the single-leaf pine through reforestation efforts to bring the trees back to sustainable numbers. Of course, the relatively small tribe wasn't always financially ready to take on more land, Smokey says. Their need to conserve the single-leaf pine, however, presented an opportunity. It came about 4 years ago through a collaboration with the Feather River Land Trust and the Northern Sierra Partnership, two conservation-focused nonprofits. Smokey worked on the land acquisition with Corey Pargy, the executive director of the Feather River Land Trust. The organization helped facilitate the land sale. They also helped the tribe get a $5.5 million grant from the California Wildlife Conservation Board. Here's Pargy.
There's a lot of funding from the state of California for conservation. Conserving these biodiverse landscapes is a high priority.
Despite the grant, the tribe needed another $500,000 to complete the purchase. However, donors gifted enough funds to make up the difference.
When it comes to philanthropy, getting fundraising, people are more likely to give money to nonprofit organizations than they are to tribes. People still just don't want to help tribes still, but they'll help organizations. That's just kind of the realities of where we're at.
Although the plan is to set the land aside for preservation, Smokey hasn't taken the possibility of economic opportunities for the Washishu people off the table. Jimmy Remo, KPR News.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Jill Freitas for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Man!
out forever for some seniors coming up. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, and of course, Alice Cooper's classic is the only way to come into this kind of chat with the Parents for Safe Grad event, which is happening on May 24th. Juno Parents for Safe Graduation started in 89. With the intention to provide a safe alcohol and drug-free venue for all Juneau area high school seniors to celebrate their achievement. It's an awesome thing that happens. It seems to have grown bigger and bigger every year. And I have two fantastic parents in the house with me, Karen Tarver and Mandy Malott. Welcome in, Gunnith Cheesh, for being here. Wasiati, how are you today, Mandy?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Boston. Happy to be here.
Excellent. And Wasiati, to you, how are you today, Karen?
I'm well, thank you. Glad to be here, too.
Okay, so let's get right into it, because this is a huge event. It's happening in a couple of weeks. I'm assuming it happens right after graduation, right?
It does, and with just one school now, since we have Juno Douglas High School, it actually doesn't start till 9 p.m., so parents and students can go out, have dinner afterwards, whatever, you know, have those family pictures. And then they want to show up at either Thunder Mountain Middle School or Juno Douglas High School. Check-in starts at 8, and then we have buses that take the kids out to the UAS Rec Center, and the party starts at 9 p.m. They do have to arrive by bus, though. That's the one thing to keep in mind.
So they have to take the bus. You can't have your parents drop you off. Why is that?
It's really a safety thing, because really once we have the kids check in, they get a name badge, and we are making sure that they have a safe environment. They can bring a guest with them. A guest can be ages 16 to 20. They need to have ID, as do the seniors, and it's $10 for every guest. They need to check in with the senior. And if people elect to leave the party early, they actually don't get to come back in. But Mandy's going to tell you why they should stay, because there's some really cool things that happen if they stay for the whole party.
So I can't bring my mom?
No. Well, your mom could volunteer, Boston.
That's right.
Oh, well, we'll get to that, too.
Your mom could be part of the committee that is handing out prizes all night long, that is hosting all of the great activities that we have. There are these cash grab cubes that the kids love. There are segways that they can ride, spike ball, connect four. There's bowling, bingo, a whole artist area that's always really popular. Just lots. A big hit is the casino room. Yes. Yeah, so.
Casino. Teach them gambling early.
Well, a little bit of poker, a little bit of blackjack, but it is very popular.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. That poker's fun. Poker's a good thing. And blackjack is hard to beat. Yeah, you know, but that's good. I love that. So, and when they're playing, obviously they're not playing for real money in those casino rooms. What are they playing for? Cash prizes or what?
Yes, there's cash prizes associated with the poker.
But they're not ponying up their own
no,
money.
No. The evening is totally hosted by our beautiful community.
Yeah. Yes.
Such an important and such a fun event for the graduating seniors. And every high school graduate in town is invited to.
That's so great.
It really brings everybody together.
Right. We have the homeschool programs involved, as well as our local school district. But this really wouldn't happen without the volunteers, which we have a parent volunteer group that helps put this on every year. And then we have donors, and it's businesses, it's individuals. We have people that contribute $25 every year. We have businesses that give us $5,000. And so just a big shout out for some of our bigger ones would be Char, Valley Medical, Robin Lotus with State Farm, the Public Safety Employee Association, Juneau Emergency Medical Association, CBJ, Bartlett, Moose Lodge, so many others. Bullwinkle's provides a pizza for every senior.
They get
a coupon for a pizza, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. They've done that for years. And then the Grind also gives them a coupon for a free grind drink.
Nice. Got to get hooked on the caffeine
too,
right? So when did this start? Like I said in the intro, it started in 1989 here in Juneau. It seems to be also like I was talking to someone earlier today about it. They had it in their community, which wasn't here in Juneau. And I remember sort of having a lock-in kind of event. It wasn't for graduation, but it was just a way to sort of celebrate and keep everybody in. And back then, we went the whole night. We went to like 8 a.m. or something crazy like that. 5 a.m. got a little weird in there, but it was kind of fun. So, but how did it start here in Juneau? Do you all know?
For me, I'm a 1992 graduate of JDHS, and it was, and back then it had been around for a few years. And back then, it was give away a car. So
what?
Stay and you receive a car. And I can't recall how long that lasted. But so today, you know, our grand prize, the drawing is $2,026 and a whole bunch of money. I mean, if we added up the amount of money and prizes throughout the night from the activities and just the prize drawing, it's pretty significant. But I think it really was just a focus by parents on keeping kids safe and providing them with a really positive, fun atmosphere to do that together.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a great thing. You know, it's mm-hmm. a wonderful way to do it. And you were mentioning that I can't bring my mom, but my mom or dad or other parent, grandparent, mm-hmm. could volunteer. So tell me a little bit about that, because you probably still need volunteers in all the different areas, right?
We would love volunteers. And we have, some of you may be familiar with, there's a website, it's called Sign Up Genius. But we basically have all the different volunteer opportunities on there. It describes kind of what it is, what time we need you. And that is on our website. So if you just Google Juno Safe Grad Alaska, you'll see their website or our Facebook page. Both have links to the sign up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can be a dealer in the casino room. You can run the cash grab booth. You can hang out in the arts and crafts room and do some crafts yourself with the kids. You know, just anything you want to help with, we can find a job for you, I guess.
It's just such a fun time for parents, too,
yes.
I've got to say. Like, this is the third year I'll be volunteering there with our third kiddo. And some of these kids I haven't seen since kindergarten, right? Like,
oh, wow.
It's just – so it's really fun to just to be there as a parent as a community member.
Great
celebrating
community
the kids.
Event. Yeah. Celebrating them moving out into adulthood with all the responsibilities and trials and tribulations. Or college, I guess, too,
yes.
one of them. So what time does the party go till?
So for those that maybe aren't night owls, we do have buses that head out at midnight. For those that want to stay and maybe be there for that grand prize drawing, because you do have to be present to win the grand prize, that will happen at 1:26 p.m. And then there's buses.
A.M., I would assume.
A.M.,
oh, yes.
Sorry, A.M., sorry, 1:26 a.m. Yeah, we're not going to party 24 hours. but, yes, so then the buses will depart right after that grand prize drawing and take students back to either high school or the middle school.
I see. Okay. And like you said, if you leave the party, you cannot come back in. And so there's no bus ride home.
That
right? All of that situation. And how many do we know how many seniors we have this year?
We're around 370.
That's about right. Yes.
Yeah.
Kind
wow.
of getting that final count, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And how many usually come to the party?
We talked about this yesterday, and it's usually about 65% or so of the graduating
wow,
seniors,
that's really
and then they'll
cool.
bring a guest, you know. So it's really a party for about 400 to 500 students.
Holy moly.
Not all stay in the whole time, but it is a big party.
Yeah.
And the rec center, just huge shout out to Dave Klein and his staff at the UAS Rec Center. This has been the third or fourth, maybe fifth year there. Fantastic venue for this. It's a great indoor area. It spills outside for a lot of the events as well, or activities. We're really thankful to have that space and to be able to use it and partner with the staff there
cool.
to host it.
And you were saying, Mandy, that there's a lot of cash going around on this
mm-hmm.
night. So this cash...
We know that what human doesn't love cash, right?
We love the green. Cash grab cube. How does that work?
Oh, gosh, Karen, I don't know. Have you ever done it? I've not done it.
I have helped with it. So it's actually really fun. And it's basically like a tent with a blower blowing into it. And we put in fake cash and real cash. And we put in real cash every about 15 minutes to kind of replenish the mix. But the kids stand in there for 30 seconds and grab as much cash as they can in 30 seconds, stuffing into their pockets or wherever, you know, down their shirt. And then they have to wear goggles, of course, and they come out and they sit there and count how much cash. And that line is pretty much nonstop. That and the casino are the two most popular things for sure.
Yeah, I love that. That's so cool. And is there food?
Yes.
There is.
So that's what I meant to say when we were talking about how this goes into the wee hours. There's a real popular Red Bull Spritzer line that several of the parents have been joking about. If I'm going to sign up for that late shift, you're going to also find me in the...
I need a cut in line ticket for that line.
But lots of great food has been donated. recommended from local restaurants and yeah, lots of great food and drinks available for the kids.
And we purchase some with the donations. Breezen does some of our catering. We get pizzas from Bullwinkle's. So stuff we know kids love. Basically, there's plenty to eat all night.
Yeah. And how many volunteers do you end up usually having? Like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the parents are volunteering, but...
That's a good question. I would guess over the course of the night, we probably need about 70 people over the course of the night.
Yeah.
And we do have opportunities if you can't. Don't want to stay up late. We need people Friday to help with setup, Saturday help with setup, even Sunday some setup. If you like decorating, if you just want to help assemble the gifts, we have gift bags for each senior that they get as they leave, and we have to kind of assemble that stuff on Friday. So all of that, again, is on that online sign-up list that's on our website or Facebook.
I wish I had this when I was graduating high school. We didn't have that. I was in Anchorage, and I don't remember what we did, but I'm sure it was, you know, I did something with my grandparents or something, you know, more of a dinner thing, but we didn't do a graduation party like this. This is awesome. There's cash involved. There's, like, all kinds of things.
We have snow cones. We have selfie stations. We have the glacier photo booth, I think it's called, is going to be there. So, you know, you can get those final pictures with your high school buddies, you know, for that you'll have that picture for the rest of your life, remembering that very special day when you graduated.
That's cool. So for the parents listening, there's a Facebook page, Juno Safe Grad Alaska. There's also an Instagram page, Juno Safe Grad Alaska. You can also email questions to safegradjuno@gmail.com if you have questions. And they can find out more at the website too. You mentioned a website.
The website is JunoSafeGrad. I think it's .webly.com. But again, if you just Google JunoSafeGrad, you'll find us.
Yeah, you'll find it. And your favorite search engine is the way to go. All high school seniors are invited for free.
Correct.
They can bring a guest 16 to 20 years old for $10.
That's right. Cash only, please.
Cash only, please. And that, and you're going to meet, once you, do you have to sign up for it?
You don't have, there's no pre-registration. We have all the names for all the graduating seniors and at each of the check-in spots. So again, the Thunder Mountain Middle School or Juno Douglas High School. And so again, check-in starts at 8 p.m. The buses leave at 8:45. So you basically, if you're a senior, just show up, have your ID, get checked in. We'll give you your name tag and you're good to go.
I love that. That's awesome. Is there anything else we need to know about this?
Volunteer and just share with your friends, because the more students, the more kids we get to celebrate those high school graduates, the better, the more successful the event is.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Mandy Malott, Karen Tarver, Gwyneth Cheesh for being here. Thank you so much. It's Parent Safe Grad happening on May 24th. Mm. Happy graduation, all you Juno seniors.
That's right.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Boston.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's a little of the heists that were live on the red carpet stage a couple years ago on Juno Afternoon.
Like a bird on the wing, like a melody fan. tides float in the arms of the waltz across the Milky Way till we lose.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That's a little bit of The Heists live from the red carpet stage. Aaron and Andrew Heist, along with Josh Fortenberry and Taylor Dallas Vidic, will be on the show tomorrow to talk about the event that they have coming up this Saturday at the Alaskan ahead of their Ireland tour, which is really kind of cool. But what else is happening this week? Well, three contemporary plays, three nights, three different casts and directors, three locations, all free and open to the public. First come, first serve seating. It's the Juno Ghostlight Theater Play Crawl, and it starts tomorrow night. I'm joined now in the studio by Kate Ross and Kylie Ferguson, two of the directors who join me now in the studio. Welcome in. Gonna cheese. Wasiati. How are you today, Kate?
I'm so good. You're I'm so good. Excited.
And Kylie, wasiati to you. How are you today?
Sheesh. Thank you so much for having us. I'm excited and ready.
Yeah, absolutely. And technically, we have all three directors in the room because I'm also directing one of these plays. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to all that stuff happening here in just a second. So, Kate, first of all, tell me how this idea came about for Juno Ghostlight to do sort of a new play reading on this awesome name, obviously taken from the pub crawl idea.
Yeah.
So play crawl, where'd the idea come from?
Yeah, I really love... I mean, contemporary plays. I mean, I love all kinds of plays. Let's be real. I love the classics, too. But it was kind of inspired by the play that I'm directing, by Grief World, which is a new play that was just written a couple years ago. And I wanted to do something with it. And then I was like, what if we made it into a series and pulled some other more contemporary plays that people were really excited about? And from talking with Kylie, I knew that she had this play in mind that she loved. And then we talked as a board and some other people pitched ideas. And yeah, so we're excited to do readings. Readings are fun. They're a little less... a lot less of a time commitment for the actors and everyone involved. It's a chance to get up in front of an audience in kind of a more unpolished way that can be really, really exciting. And it's letting us have these shows be free and open to the public as well, as opposed to all the work and money that goes into a larger production. So we're able to have it just accessible for anyone who wants to come.
Is there anything about, like, potentially wanting to produce these fully sometime? Is this a way to sort of gauge, like, what is this play about? And how do people respond to this play? And are actors interested in this play? Is that something you think about?
I think potentially, but it's not necessarily, like, the impulse behind it. I think that there's always an idea of, like, oh, my gosh, if... If the audience really loves something, then maybe that's something we should talk about. And
if
maybe
somebody writes
pitch.
You a check for $10,000 after the reading and says, please do this play.
We would take it under serious consideration as
and
a board.
And I will take the money and run.
You'll never
Kylie's
see her
Hawaii.
Again.
Yeah. that's funny. So you chose Grief World, but let's start tomorrow night. We're going to start in order here. So let's talk about Dance Nation. It's Claire Barron play. Mm-hmm. So tell me how you discovered this play. What do you love about this play? Let's start there.
Absolutely. So I first read this play when I was in college. It came out, I think, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And as a previous dance competition, ballet conservatory kid, this show had me all over it.
Mm.
And so I was originally going to do a staged reading of it in college, and then COVID hit.
Mm.
And so we had a much smaller Zoom version. But, like, there's just something about the show that has stuck with me because it's a dark comedy. It is about what does it take / what do you give up as a preteen in the intensity of, like, the dance competition world.
Is it the dance competition of, like, what kind of dance?
Yes. So if you've ever been to, like, a dance competition, they always have, like, different categories, whether you're doing, like, jazz, acro-lyrical, ballet. Like, there's all of these different categories.
Acro-lyrical?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you come see the show, you get to see a little bit of what that could be. But, yeah, and, like, while most of the characters in this show are, like, 11 to 13, this is not a show for kids. This is a show for adults to reflect on, like, what is some of that, like, performing arts training I went through as a child? Was it appropriate? Was it okay? and like a chance to reflect on those friendships that you make and you lose because of the intensity. Slash, is there a world outside of dance? Because for these kids, no.
Does it deal with stage moms at all?
Yes.
that's an interesting thing. But it's fascinating, too. I haven't read this play. I'm excited to see it and hear it. But the idea that, you know, you think about people who – I had a famous pianist on here a while ago, a Russian pianist, and he was here for a piano series at the Jack. Ooh. And I was asking him about when he started. He started at 4. And he was like an older man now, so he's been doing it his entire life. And there is – it's interesting because there's something about – when you think about like, you know, the Dennis stars, the Williams sisters, like they start really young and they're just so intensely trained that they become such good, you know, athletes or in whatever world it is, a musician or an artist in some way. And sometimes it does start really, really young. But not everybody is going to make it, right? And
yeah.
The pressures that are a part of that. So is it all sort of, is it talking about all that kind
it
of stuff?
Pretty much covers all of that.
Yeah.
Because we have a pretty large, very fun cast, but each of these characters has their own, like, are they going to be the best dancer in the world? Do they want to be on Broadway? Do they just want to talk about wolves? And this was their way of their mom having them make friends with other people. Like, a little bit across the spectrum, I would say.
Oh, you just made me think of another play you should do sometime. The Wolves by Sarah DeLapp.
We're aware of that.
Amazing show.
Great
it's
play.
On the dream list.
Yeah, it is a dream list.
yeah,
that's a really, really wonderful show. But this show sort of covers all of that area.
Yeah.
That's going to be really fun. And you're telling me now, you said that a lot of the characters in it are 11 to 13, but are they being played by adults?
They are all played by adults.
Okay.
Because this is not a show for kids.
Right, that's what I was making sure, like,
yeah.
You're talking about. This is Dance Nation. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're talking about the Juno Ghostlight Theater Play Crawl, which is different play readings each night over the next 3 nights, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Starting with Thursday, May 14th, Dance Nation by Claire Barron. So tell me who's in this play.
Who isn't in this play?
There's a ton of people.
We have a really fabulous cast. So we have, I'm so sorry to whoever I'm about to ruin your last name. We have Tim Sislow, Nomi Saxton, Jalen Martin, Alicia Falberg, Nimi Phillips, Roman Malou.
Mahanya.
Not even close. Kelsey Bryce Riker, Alex Curtin, Tara Stark, and like...
Wow.
That's a fabulous team to be working with.
That's a cast for sure. And this is going to be at the Kunikidi Northern Light United Church. And that's the thing is each night we're in a different location, Kate.
We are indeed.
And why did you do that? Is it just for funsies?
For funsies. Why not? I wanted to bring some of these pieces into some spaces downtown that don't always have theater. Mm. Northern Lights is a nice way to kind of ease us in because there definitely is theater and other performing arts there from time to time. But we're going to be in the back hall, not in the pews. So it will feel a little different. If you've been to like a music concert there, it will definitely not feel like that.
Oh, I see. So you're going to be, okay, that's great. That's good to know. So you're not trying to fill that entire space there in terms of like sound.
No,
and, stuff.
And that
yeah.
might feel a little sacrilegious at certain points during the play. So
during
we're
Dance
not
Nation.
In a church. We are using a church space. And part of what I wanted to do for Dance Nation especially was find a space that could be like the random empty spot that you have if you're traveling around and you need to be rehearsing somewhere. And so I was looking at, like, could we do it in a gym? Could we do it in, you know, random places like that?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, we decided that a gym, the acoustics are horrendous and no one would be able to hear anything.
Yeah. That's not good.
Yeah.
But so, you know, random church basement. It's not in the basement. But that kind of an idea, right, of, like, these kids and you're traveling and you're getting housed out and you're rehearsing in weird places.
Right. So this is Dance Nation. It's the Kunikidi Northern Light United Church, 7:30 tomorrow night, Thursday, May 14th, and it's free. All these readings are free. There's no charge. I'm assuming you'll be taking donations at the door, perhaps.
We will always take donations,
yeah.
But yeah, free, open to the public, first come, first served for seating.
And this story sounds very fascinating, a cast of thousands, it seems like.
Oh, yes.
So it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of energy happening tomorrow night. And then Friday night, we have a play called Grief World, which is, as Kate mentioned, a newer play. Tell me a little bit about this play and this playwright and how you found this play.
I am so excited about this play. Hannah Wolf, who was a Juno kid that I actually knew through Drama Debate and Forensics, which, sidebar, donate them money so that they can go to state, I believe.
Or Nationals.
Nationals. They're going to Nationals.
They'll be on the show on Friday. We're going to talk
all about
it. There
you go. A lot of great people got their start or got their continuing education at DDF in high school. At any rate, Hannah Wolf, incredible director and theater professional. I've known for years and years, and we were having conversation a couple years ago, and I was like, hey, do you have any just like fun, you know, exciting new scripts? Like, you know, I just want to read some kind of interesting things and kind of see what's out there in terms of very contemporary new stuff. And she sent me a few scripts, and when I read Grief World, I was instantly hooked. It is a fascinating script. It's also a dark comedy, but in a very different vein than Dance Nation. It was written just a couple years ago, I think 2023 or four, and it's had a couple readings down in LA, in the LA area, but it has never had a full production yet. So this is a very new play still. And so we're really excited to bring it to Alaska. And I was introduced to the playwright over email by Hannah Wolf. The playwright's name is also Hannah Kana. And she said, yes, please do a reading in Alaska. So we went full steam ahead and on a whim said, hey, do you want to come to Alaska to see our reading? Mm-hmm. And she said, that would be amazing. I've never been to Alaska. So we're really excited to be hosting the playwright here as well. She's really just here for fun, but she will be at the reading on Friday. So there will be an opportunity for a very informal, casual, like Q&A, meet the director after the show.
That's cool. And what's the play Grief World about?
It is, it's about rage, it's about misogyny, it is skewering toxic masculinity, it's about motherhood. Did I say
what
rage
isn't
yet?
It about?
It's about all that good stuff. It is centering around a group of men that are being played by a group of women. Mm. And then there are some other vignettes of scenes that are some different characters that are doubled by the same cast. But our cast is amazing. It's really just some of the most incredible performers, directors, theater women in town that
drop some names.
We got so many names. We have Elizabeth Peisel Davis, which she is amazing, as we all know. We have Stacey Katas, Donnie Gott, Allison Wade, and Shona Osterhout, which we're very excited to have all
That's
of them.
That's so cool. Yeah. Powerhouse cast.
Powerhouse cast. I have worked with all of these women in different capacities. Some have directed me. I have been in plays with them. Some have been mentors to me in different ways. So I'm incredibly excited for this group to come together.
And this is going to be Friday, May 15th, and you're going to be at Amalga's Back Room, so
yes.
That's going to be kind of fun.
Yeah, we're excited to be in that space. It's a really nice kind of blank canvas of a space. The entrance to it is off of 2nd Street right there next to Wells Fargo, right across the street from Lemon Tree Cafe.
It's like a blue door.
It's a blue door. It's a blue door.
Around the corner.
Yeah. So it's not the main Amalga tasting room. It's on 2nd Street.
I'm sure there's going to be a sign on the Amalga main room saying, go around the
go
corner.
Go around the corner.
Yeah, and that's also at 7:30 on Friday. Again, no admission. And that is, you said Hannah Kana is
yes.
her name. That's really cool. Grief World. I love how you have in the description here, it says rage. And then in quotes, healing,
yes.
and then misogyny. The other two words aren't in quotes.
No.
So is there a meaning behind that?
You may see, you know, someone's idea of quote-unquote healing may be different from other people's ideas.
Right, I gotcha.
Yeah, part of what this group of men do is perhaps their version of healing.
I see. Okay. I gotcha. Okay. So that's going to be really cool. And that's the second play. And this is going to be... at Amalga Distillery. And then on Saturday night, on May 16th, on Saturday, is a play called Eurydice by Sarah Rule. Now, this is an older play. This has been around about 20 years, mm-hmm. Directed by some hack named Boston Christopher.
Never heard of him.
And that's going to be really interesting. It's going to be at Alaska Robotics.
Yeah.
And so That's going to be a lot of good times. We'll get into the cast and everything. But tell me a little bit about why you picked Eurydice.
Yeah, Eurydice was actually pitched by someone else on our board when we were just discussing what kind of scripts we would love to see a reading done. And when it was pitched, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that play. That's a really, really good play. And then when I reread the script, I was like, oh, yes, I remember why I love this. Mm-hmm. I'm always a sucker for those kind of Greek tragedies and some of those old stories. But what I love about Eurydice is that it centers her perspective a lot more, where a lot of tellings of the Eurydice and Orpheus story center more on Orpheus or more on their relationship. And this version really centers on Eurydice and also on the character of her father, mm-hmm. which is not a character that is in the traditional myth. So it's a really, really beautiful look at relationships, different types of relationships, familial and romantic, memory, what do you retain, what do you forget, what you would do for the people you love, how far you would go, and I really love the language in it as well. And they did it at Perseverance like 15-ish
long time ago.
Years ago, and yeah. I remember seeing it, and it was just a beautiful production of the show, but it's been a while since anyone has done it in Juneau, so...
Yeah. Yeah, so if there's old Junoites around, you might have seen that show at Perseverance. It was directed by Roblin Davis. Mm-hmm. It had Ryan Conroe in it. It had a few other folks in it. And we're great. It's great to be hearing it again. It's an interesting – I didn't get to see that production. I wasn't here yet. I think it was like the year before I got to Juno. Mm-hmm. And so it's you. I don't even know how old you were. Then, but you weren't that old. And so we have also a really wonderful cast. You want to run down the cast for Eurydice?
Yeah, absolutely. So playing Eurydice is Aaron Tripp, who we all know and love, and mm-hmm. just an amazing voice as well, which I'm really excited to hear with this language. Playing her father is Jeff Hedges. Orpheus is played by Felix Tiet. Then we have Brian Crowder. And then we have a chorus of Stones, and that will be played by Stacy and Autumn Katass and Nalena O'Brien.
Nice. Yeah, it's a really wonderful cast. Now, what's interesting about this grouping, too, is that these plays is like you said, they're shorter rehearsal periods. Mm-hmm. It's just a couple rehearsals before the reading. So you're sort of getting like a lot of first instincts on this. You're getting mm-hmm. the first read. You're getting to experience the plays in kind of a really fun, low-key environment, and you really get to focus on the text, which is really good. So you want to come out to these shows. It's the Juno Ghostlight Theater Play Crawl. It's going to be happening the next three nights all around town. And we mentioned, I don't know if we mentioned, but Eurydice will be at Alaska Robotics.
Yes.
On Saturday night, also at 7:30, all free. So it's Dance Nation tomorrow at Kinnickety Northern Light United Church. It's Grief World at Amalga's Back Room on Friday night, May 15th, and then Eurydice by Sarah Rule on Saturday, May 16th. Kate Ross, Kylie Ferguson, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Goodness, cheese.
You can go to junoghostlight.com for more information. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, live music with local musicians Josh Fortenberry, Taylor Dallas Vidic, and The Heists ahead of their upcoming trip to Ireland. Plus, Fubau will be here to talk about the torch run. Juno Afternoon airs right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Ak Bay 91.7. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunnath Cheesh, have a wonderful Wednesday.